In order to understand why Yehuda does not want Tamar to marry Shelah, his youngest son, after his first two sons die, we first need to understand who Yehuda has become since Yosef's sale. That change in Yehuda is signaled from the very beginning of his story in this parsha. As it says, about that time, Yehuda went down from his brothers and camped near a certain Adullami whose name was Chira. While the word vayered, he went down, certainly denotes a physical action, the connotation of descending or going down may give us insight into Yehuda's inner state in this moment. He is caught in a downward spiral in a state of depression and isolation. Notably, the text does not only state that he went down, but that he went down from his brothers. Whatever Yehuda is experiencing in this moment, its result is disconnection from his family. The family structure that began to fracture with Yosef's sale has continued to disintegrate, this time not by force, but because of Yehuda's despair. Why, though, has Yehuda arrived at this place of depression and isolation? While the text does not explicitly give us a reason, Rashi notes that this incident directly follows Yosef's sale, in which Yehuda played a leading role. And it came to pass at that time. Why is this section placed here, thus interrupting the section dealing with the history of Yosef? To teach that his brothers degraded him from his high position. When they saw their father's grief, they said, "You told us to sell him. If you had told us to send him back to his father, we also would have obeyed you." While Rashi argues that Yehuda's descent is initiated by his brothers who cast him out due to their regret at the sale, it seems equally possible that it is Yehuda himself who initiates the separation for similar reasons. Yehuda is disgusted by what he did to his brother, to his despairing father, to his family. Yehuda's attempts to isolate himself from his family, however, do not end with his physical and emotional departure from their midst. Immediately after his descent from his brothers, we are told that Yehuda marries a Canaanite woman, a sort of marriage that, in previous generations of the family, has been viewed as fundamentally inappropriate for a child of Abraham's family and incompatible with being a carrier of the covenantal blessing. There Yehuda saw the daughter of a certain Canaanite whose name was Shua, and he married her and cohabited with her. Unable to face himself after his crime, Yehuda reacts by rejecting everything of which he now deems himself unworthy: his brothers, his family, and his role in the covenant itself. Now that he understands himself as unworthy of being a member of the covenantal family, Yehuda begins to build a new family whose very composition indicates that, no longer worthy of its blessings, he is also no longer obligated to abide by its rules. While the text does not tell us what Yehuda thought when his sons began to die one after the other, each immediately after marriage, the context of the story might help us to hazard an answer. Perhaps Yehuda, filled with self-loathing, isolated from his brothers, cut off from the covenant, believes that God is punishing him for his role in Yosef's sale. Perhaps Yehuda thinks that he is being punished appropriately for what he did to his father. Because he deprived his father of a son, he is being deprived of his own sons. Because Yaakov will never have grandchildren from Yosef, his favorite child, God is killing each of Yehuda's sons in turn as soon as they marry, so that Yehuda will never have grandchildren. The Yehuda we meet by the time his sons die is a man who is all too ready to believe that their deaths are his fault, that having deprived his father of his favorite son, he deserves to be deprived of the chance of descendants. And so, as each son marries and dies, Yehuda becomes more and more convinced that he is cursed, that marriage for his sons can never lead to progeny, but only to death. Desperate to protect Shelah, his youngest son, he decides that he will not allow him to marry. Then Yehuda said to his daughter-in-law, Tamar, "Stay as a widow in your father's house until my son Shelah grows up," for he thought, "He too might die like his brothers." So Tamar went to live in her father's house. In Yehuda's mind, as long as Shelah remains single and not in a position where he is capable of having children, the grandchildren Yehuda believes God is deliberately denying him, he has a chance to live. While the reader knows that Yehuda's first two sons have died because of their own sins, Yehuda believes that this is his last chance to save his son by making sure that his line will end with him. Yehuda bargains for his son's life, protecting him in the only way he knows how, by sacrificing the possibility of a future he believes he does not deserve. This understanding of Yehuda's motives, the belief that he is doomed to have no progeny, that any child of his who marries and is in a position to have children will be killed by God, also sheds light on Yehuda's encounter with Tamar, whom he believes to be a prostitute. Unlike Avraham, who remarries when his wife dies, Yehuda seeks sexual encounters that have no possibility of permanence or of children he will acknowledge as his own. Yehuda has no intention of remarrying and subjecting potential future children to a life of loneliness. If his line is destined to end with his children, he will make sure that no more children, or at least children he must recognize, will come into the world. But in Tamar, Yehuda meets his mirror. While Yehuda is willing to abandon any possibility of a future, Tamar is willing to go to any lengths to ensure hers. Like her namesake, the date tree, whose roots spread wide and deep even in the most inhospitable of environments, Tamar clings to life and her desire to bring future life into the world. In Yehuda and Tamar's sexual encounter, these two opposing worldviews meet. Yehuda in his despair, seeking sexual satisfaction with no possibility of connection or generative possibility, and Tamar in her determination, believing against all odds in the possibility of life and a future. When Tamar reveals her pregnancy to Yehuda, sending him tokens of identity and daring him to acknowledge his paternity with the words Hakerna, recognize please, she is not only gambling for her own life, she is challenging Yehuda's understanding of himself. Cursed, sterile, unable of generating lasting life, and unworthy of descendants. As she was being brought out, she sent this message to her father-in-law. It's by the man to whom these belong that I'm pregnant. And she added, recognize, please, whose seal and cord and staff are these? Look, Tamar is saying, you may believe that you are only capable of begetting death, but here, within me, is life. Do you recognize the man whose staff and cord these are? Do you recognize the man you once were, a man who believed in the possibility of a future? Are you able in this moment to save me, your children, and yourself by abandoning your certainty that God has abandoned you? Are you willing to step back from the abyss, to let go of the narrative you have constructed about your life, and to search for the possibility of a better future? When Yehuda makes the choice to save Tamar and his unborn children, he is also choosing to believe in the possibility of a future for himself and returning him and his family to the covenant. It is the moment that allows Yehuda we encounter at the beginning of this parak, defeated and isolated, to become the Yehuda we meet next, once again embedded within his family and acting as a leader. It is the choice that allows him to become the man who can fight for his brother Binyamin, even when he thinks that Binyamin has done something unconscionable, because he himself has learned that sin does not have to meet a dead end. And through that defense, to become the man who takes a family fractured by sin and makes it whole again. The story of Yehuda's choice does not end with his generation. Peretz, the first of the twins Tamar bears, is the progenitor of the Davidic line, and ultimately the ancestor of the anticipated Messiah. Why does it matter that Mashiach is born from this moment? Perhaps because what Mashiach symbolizes is redemption where redemption feels impossible. The ultimate possibility of life in a world that so often feels too overcome by sin. In anticipating the Messiah every day, we remind ourselves of the lesson Yehuda learned, that no matter what we do, no matter how alone we might feel, we are not abandoned by God.